You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the Game, yeah, Building the Game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, May 9th, 2016. You're listening to episode 206. It's a big night for us. It's a big night. We're back after several weeks away. My name's Rob. There's Jason.
Hey.
We're back. We haven't recorded in a long time, dude.
It's been a few weeks, and this is the first, like, normal recording session we've had in forever.
Right.
Where we didn't have other stuff going on, you know.
Right. Because the last two episodes we recorded were the day after we got back from UmPub.
Right.
And that's the schedule we were on.
Mark here for the first one, and then Flip for the second one, just because those kind of got stacked up because we were behind on our interviews. Yeah. So.
And in the meantime, you kind of had to disassemble our setup here so you could record for your button shy entries.
Yeah.
So we're a little twitchy.
I still have two left to do.
So still two. Wow.
At this point, and I'll link this in the show notes, the game that I'm going to pitch tonight, that video has already been published.
You mean on next week's episode?
Yeah, I'm going to pitch that game on next week's episode.
Yeah.
But I will still put the file link in the show notes. And at that point, I may actually link two in the show notes, maybe even three, because they're all due by the day this releases, they're all due.
Yeah.
I still have two videos left to make.
Actually, they're due before this releases, aren't they?
Well, this technically releases on Monday, but it technically releases on Sunday. So,
all right.
So, yeah. Oh, well, this will be published before I have probably turned those in. I have till 11:59 on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to turn the first two in, hopefully, in the next day or two, and then my plan is by Sunday to get the next two, and I'm going to do them one at a time to make sure that I at least get as many in as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because I already have two, I'd like to get three, or I'd like to get four, but I would live with three, kind of prioritize them in a way that makes sense for getting those done in time.
Mm-hmm.
So over the next 5 weeks, I will, like, my five weeks of pitching, so 10 weeks. Yeah, I will be pitching 18 card games, almost exclusively, maybe even exclusively, if I have nothing else. Because
you'll be pitching five games with 18 cards each, not 18 card games.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, just to make sure that...
Yes, that's true. So, yeah, that's my plan, simply because I've got them and I might as well pitch them. And I'm pretty proud of some of them. And then there's one that I'm not even working on for Tagmire's thing that I'll probably submit for publishing for them later, just for consideration.
Sure.
It was my original idea for the superhero one that you were like, I thought you'd be more like this. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Oh, so you're not going to submit that one?
I'm not going to have time to.
Okay.
So I would love to.
Yeah.
I'm trying to come up with a theme that I really like for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I've got some ideas that would be cool.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as for me with that, I did end up coming up with one idea that I actually ended up pretty happy with for that. So as of this episode releasing, I submitted that a week ago. And I'll pitch that game tonight. That'll be what
I kind of figured you would.
Can hear that. I can talk about the development process on that. I'm pretty happy with where it is.
That's a fun little game. So.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's going to win, right? I mean, that's a foregone conclusion.
Unless he judges solely on videos, in which case mine is going to win.
Yeah, so you right there, you just said mine's a better game, is basically what you just said.
Your game, I think your game has more replayability than mine does.
So?
Only because yours is a real tight, simple two-player experience.
It is.
Like,
yeah.
it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't mean to bury, or, yeah, I mean, jump ahead.
Though, right, so. But no, I think that, yeah, but of the two, I feel like mine has a more button-shy appeal to it.
Well.
So.
Thematically, you might have an edge there.
So, yeah.
I agree.
Also, based on the video, too.
Yeah, it's a pretty good video. I got to give you that.
It's ridiculous.
I got to give you that.
So, I was like, so my plan was to just make a simple video.
Uh-huh.
It was just like, this is my game. This is how it works. Uh-huh. Blah, blah, blah. Like, literally just me talking to the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, hey, here's my video. And I was like, oh, freaking Rob. Now I have to try.
Because I didn't want to put my face in front of a camera or ask Christine to film me, and I was like, "What can I do? Oh, I'll animate it."
So
yeah,
right.
I mean,
so
loose animation, but
yeah, I didn't do. I mean, I did just some titles and stuff on mine, and I purposely made them all very silly and stuff.
You did sound effects, which is pretty good.
I did. Yeah. That took a lot for me to do sound effects. Both videos I've done so far have sound effects. My plan is that they all will.
Mm.
There's this website called freesound.org.
Ooh.
And I don't know if you can like use stuff and license things or not. I'm guessing probably not. But you just search for something like jungle sound. And sure enough, boom, there's a file. Jungles of Yucatan. Or you search monster sound. Other thing I searched. Yeah. And boom, there it was. And it was good. Like I was like, oh, dang, this is a good sound effect.
Right on.
Actually, the way I found the website was I searched for movie trailer thud. That was the first thing I searched. And that was the website that came up.
Cool.
And I was like, and then it was like, you have to log in to download stuff. And I'm like, oh. But then I logged in and it was super easy. I was just like, oh, download, download. Good. So
freesound.org?
Yeah, freesound.org.
Nice. Excellent. So what else you been up to? What's new? We haven't done this in a while.
I went to Florida.
You did?
Oh, I went to Diagon Alley.
Yeah, Harry Potter down there.
So we go to this work trip every year. You decided not to go this year. Big mistake, by the way. Big mistake. Because Diagon Alley was freaking impressive.
Last year.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you went to Diagon Alley last year? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you did. So... I have never been there.
It's super cool.
It makes all the other stuff at Universal look like garbage.
It does.
Though, so at the after party, we got to walk to City Walk.
Uh-huh.
And so City Walk, so at City Walk, they like walk you to get there. You have to walk through like the back lots of the park while it's turned off. Yeah. So we walked through the Simpsons place.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
Oh, is it really?
Oh my gosh. It's Springfield. I mean, it's crazy how cool it is.
That's cool.
And I'm not even a big Simpsons fan, but it was impressive. Yeah. But no, so Diagon Alley. So what was great was we walk in and they take us into the Leaky Cauldron first, and they've got fish and chips for just because they just have like food everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, you just go up and get free butter beer, and the butter beer is really good. Like it I've was, never had it before, but I was like,
I had the slushy kind last year.
I did not get the slushy kind, but even the cold kind is still almost slushy. It's so cold.
Yeah. It's kind of a butterscotch
flavor. Yeah. It actually kind of tasted to me like cream soda with some butterscotch in it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm a huge cream soda fan, so I was like, hey. And then they had, like, we rode on the Escape from Gringotts, and
that's good, isn't it?
That was really good.
And that ride is much better than the Hogwarts ride.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was nervous because... the Transformers ride, both you and I had some issues on that because the 3D was so... But the 3D in this is basically you move, you stop, 3D.
Right.
You move, you stop, 3D.
Right.
So it was... That was, you know, that was really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what a fun ride. We rode it 3 times in a row, I think. So, then they had some, we went into Weasley's Whizzing Weasbees or whatever, Weasley's shop.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of cool stuff in there. And then I really wanted to get a wand, but I did not because I didn't have any justification for it. Plus my shelf, they're a little too wide to fit on my shelf. If I could have legit displayed one on my shelf, I probably would have gotten one.
Sure.
So I want to give a shout out to somebody who's never going to hear this. And that is the nice girl who works at Grigorovich's wand shop.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Because it wasn't Ollivander's?
No, this was the one with all the characters' wands.
Okay.
So basically, they're like $40, and that's what I probably would have done rather than getting a personalized one. I would have bought a cool character's
one. I bought one of those for Christine. I bought a Hermione wand.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, this wand is cool. And she's like, oh, that's so-and-so's. Then I was like, wait, do you know all these? And she's like, I do. And I was like, really? And she's like, I do. So I'm like, all right, let's play. So I literally, we just started, boom, naming characters. Like I'm like, starting with the easy ones, like Ron, Harry, Hermione, and then I'm like, Lupin, and she's like, boom, right here. Tonks, boom, right here. Like, and finally we get to one, and I'm like Lucius Malfoy, because he is probably my favorite villain in the whole thing. I love Lucius, but it's because in the movies he's played by Jason Isaacs, love Jason Isaacs. And she's like, she pauses for a second, and was like, I got her, and she's like, actually, that's a specialty one. It's only sold in the place in Nocturne Alley.
Oh,
there's like a collector place, and that's the only way. She's like, actually, sorry, they don't really have that. But I was like, oh, I thought I got her. But it was impressive. Like, literally everyone I said,
she knew.
She knew. Yeah.
That's great.
So one of the most interesting ones was Mad-Eye Moody's, because it kind of looks like a shillelagh. Like, it's a wand with a huge wood ball on the end.
Cool.
For like clubbing people. She said it's more of a club than a wand.
Yeah.
So, and those are all the ones from the movies. It was just impressive. Like, clearly how much thought was put into, I would guess that the movie people probably worked with J.K. Rowling to really like figure out, because they don't always talk about in the books what each wand looks like. Sometimes they do.
I'm sure they put a ton of effort into that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, they're just so well done.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I would say, whose is this? And she would say the character, I'd be like, oh, duh, of course it is. Like, that's perfect for them.
Good.
So it was a lot of fun.
Cool.
So
good. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
So that's that. Mm-hmm. That's what I've been doing.
I went to an escape room.
I saw that. I was a little annoyed at you for going to an escape room without me.
I'm sorry.
Was that there's the opening one in Kalamazoo?
I heard that. Yeah,
on Portage, right next to Airway Lanes.
Yeah,
like right down the road from my house.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
So we should try and do that one.
We should. Yeah, yeah. Right. That one we should do. Yeah, the one in Grand Rapids. They had two rooms. They had a spy room and they had a virus room. So we did the spy room.
Yeah.
And the theme is that you are locked in this hotel room. And you have 1 hour to find... There's somewhere in the room, there's a list of all the true identities of all the spies for your agency.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to find it and then get out in an hour. Otherwise, somebody's going to come in and kill you.
Okay.
And we failed. We didn't make it. We got
Did
close.
Somebody actually burst in at the end?
No.
No, that would have been sweet.
No, they're just counting down clock. But it was really fun. But the first puzzle, the very first puzzle, we were stuck on for 25 minutes.
Oh,
And we only got it, they gave us three hints on a screen in there, and we only got it because the fourth hint was, hey, go to this thing and look at that thing.
Oh, wow.
That's the only reason we got it. And
do they like time how often you can get hints?
No, they just, there's a camera in there and there's a game master watching from the outside. Uh-huh. And if they feel like that they're not making any progress, they did a little chime and put a message up, said, do you want a hint? And we would either give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Okay, so they controlled when you got a hint.
Yeah, right. Right. Okay. So we, I feel like that first puzzle was unfair. Everything after that was super fun and great, but that first one I was a little disappointed in.
That it took so long.
Yeah, yeah. That it was the kind of thing where, I mean, you know, the first hint was, hey, you know, it was just a simple kind of loose thing. The third hint was, go look at this thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we still couldn't figure it out.
Oh, gosh.
And then the fourth hint was, go look at that thing, at this specific thing on this thing. And even then we struggled.
Wow. Yeah. You'd think they want to make the first few really easy to kind of give people some early wins and make them feel like they bought into it.
But that first one was by far the hardest one, and it was kind of unfair. So I was a little disappointed in that.
Because you guys lost, and so that's why you lost.
If we hadn't been stuck in that for 25 minutes, we would not have lost.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, but it was super fun. I would definitely go back and try the other room.
Cool.
Yeah. Gosh, what else is going on? It's been such a long time. You play any games lately?
Not really.
No?
No.
I've done a lot of testing your Galactic Scrappers.
Since Unpub?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I played it like five more times.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good progress.
Cool.
Really, really good progress. So cool. I feel really good about that. I think I'm kind of getting it dialed in pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. Played Finish It again with some people. Still fun. Still mm-hmm. everybody as fun as it was the first time.
That's good.
Introduced some people to Love Letter for the first time, and they really geeked out over that. What else do we play?
Love Letter.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I don't know. There were a couple other things, but they're falling out of my head now. So, anyway.
All right. Well, hey, this week for our topic, we're so behind on questions and stuff, so we thought we would just go through some questions that we have.
Yeah.
So let's do that.
Okay. You want me to start?
Why don't you start? Yeah, okay. I'm going to pull up our website here real quick because I know that we have some comments on here. So.
Okay. I'm starting with Twitter stuff. First one here is from Shu at Shoebox Games. What is the worst thing about being a game designer? What's the hardest thing for each of you to keep doing?
Starting it off on a positive note. I like that. So
the worst thing... Well, so I've talked about self-discipline a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being disciplined enough to force myself to get stuff done, but I don't want to get into that again because I've already said, you know, that's why we do this, why I like doing the show, because it forces me to be disciplined. I think maybe if I can say the thing that I'm most afraid of is sending that email to publishers to try and book an appointment.
That's tough.
That scares the crap out of me.
Well, especially because most of the time you just don't get a response.
Right.
I mean, like in our experience, it's, hey, I just don't respond to
it's
you.
It's just crickets,
Or they respond and then they don't.
And then they don't show up.
Yeah.
And you and I have both had bad experiences.
Yep.
We have had almost 100% of the time bad experiences with publishers either not responding and making a promise that they don't follow through on, or just being completely uninterested while we're giving the actual pitch.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a few positive experiences.
Yeah.
And those are publishers that I still talk to now because of that. But mm-hmm. I mean, in general, it doesn't It hasn't been great.
It's difficult. It's really difficult and intimidating. And I think a lot of that's just because we're nobodies, right? And they don't, I mean, yeah, we're first-time designers. And I mean, sure, Saloon Tycoon was a big success, but I'm still a nobody until that game sells well, you know?
Right.
Yeah, until that is on store shelves and people play it and it sells well.
Right.
And if it doesn't, then I'm still a nobody.
That's true.
Yeah.
You'll always be a nobody in my heart, Rob.
Oh, thanks, Jason.
All right, I've got one here.
Okay.
From Robin Gibson, that is, comment on our website. Not to give a sales pitch, but it sounds like you should probably try Risus, or Risus, R-I-S-U-S, Risus, Risus.
R-I-S-U-S?
Yeah, I'm assuming Risus.
Well, I don't know.
Risus. Anyways, the Anything RPG. Character creation is as simple as naming a character and giving them stats. The game calls them cliches. I love that. Players choose what cliches they want, and the gameplay is basically freeform role-playing with dice rolling anytime you have a chance to fail at something. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. That sounds all right.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
I have one more thing I want to say.
Okay.
Are you going to say something else about this?
Well, I was going to say you didn't answer Shu's question from your perspective.
But... Oh, I will do that. Okay. One thing, I said this before, but I want to say it again because this is such a good comment. I just thought it's from Robert, who's Senior Bob.
Yeah.
He said, scorpion tossing would be another way to build tension in a game.
That's true.
I just love that comment because no one has said a truer comment than that.
Yeah.
It would build tension.
It would be real tension.
It would be a lot of tension.
Tossing. And I think actually catching the tossed scorpion is the truly tension.
Yeah. So I didn't say what's the worst thing about game design. I kind of agreed with you, but to give my own answer, I feel this with a lot of things that I try and do because I do a lot of different things, right?
Yeah.
And I like to be creative in a lot of different ways. And so one of the things that's hardest for me about any sort of endeavor, whether it's creative or fun, is anytime I know other people doing it, I tend to feel like I'm not really part of the group. And that's because I feel like I'm never as devoted as other people are to said thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I know we both kind of feel that with game design,
yeah,
right? Because we're not nearly as devoted as some people we know, and good for the people who are. But I will say that as a game designer, I feel that less than with other things. But that's, you know, that's just always hard, you know, like, and I think for me, the scariest thing for me is, feeling like I'll never succeed at this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, anything else I've like, so I wanted to make films. So I made a few feature films and I've got two done. I have another one that we're working on, for like forever, like years and years, but it's going to be done soon. And I'm really excited about that. But like, I feel like I accomplished something, right? And with games, you know, that has been a little harder, to say like I did this, you know? So I published my own game, but like that didn't really feel like I got published. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't feel like until Mark hands me that finished game, right? Mm-hmm. I will still feel that way, you know?
Yeah.
Even though I know this game's going to go through, I think that having been let down before, for me, that's really hard, is I just keep assuming that's going to happen again. Even though with Mark, I know that won't happen. I mean, we're moving forward full steam ahead. And,
yeah.
Oh, and guys, I can't show you the artwork, but oh.
It looks so good.
Whoa, it's so good.
Oh,
wow.
Man.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. It's amazing. So anyways, plug it for that. But yeah, so I think for me, that's probably the hardest part.
Yeah.
I would say that feeling like I'm never going to succeed, feeling like I'm never going to, I don't want to be like a game designer that everybody knows and is famous. I mean, I'd be okay with that, but like, that's not my goal, right?
Yeah.
My goal is to, you know, make a few games, get them out to the world and have the world like those games, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Your turn.
Okay. Let's see. Another one from Shu. He's got three of them here for us, so we'll do those all in a row. So next one is, who would win in an all-out shoot 'em up? The characters from Gunslinging Ramblers or the characters from Saloon Tycoon? What do you think?
Gunslinging Ramblers, hands down.
They've all got guns.
And, well, they all have guns, and their whole job is killing. I mean, that's literally their job, right?
Yeah.
Your guys don't even shoot each other.
I've got four outlaws in Saloon Tycoon, and only one of them has a gun.
Right.
I
got 24.
Right. And then I've got the sheriff who has a gun, but the rest of my people are all pretty peaceful. They just want to get some business done, man.
Man, my rabbi has two guns.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so what does that say? I make a game about commerce and you make a game about killing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And drinking and playing poker,
well,
to be fair.
Yeah, right. That's
Let's cover all our bases here.
Yeah, right. So I don't think I don't think there's any debate right. in that right, at, right. All.
So,
at all.
But if it came down to strategically doing something like building a city, I got your guys got me every time.
Yeah, we're gonna
my
make
guys
money
would just crash
guys.
The place.
Yeah, we're gonna make money off your people.
That's a great question, though.
Yeah, and let's just hit Shu's last one here.
Yeah.
Ever considered recording an episode where swearing was okay and you both got real? I'd listen to BTG After Hours, BTG After Dark. that's a funny idea.
That's a funny idea. So here's the deal. I would never want to put that in our main podcast stream because it could jack up our ratings with iTunes because yeah. we're in marked as not explicit.
Yeah.
And you could do it by episode, but sometimes it can be confusing. But if you want that, come to a convention.
Yes.
And you will get BTG After Hours. Ask any builder who's been at a convention with us.
Right.
And that's what you get. And
that's when the filthy sailor mouth comes
right.
out of
Well,
me.
And that's when we talk about the stuff we can't talk about on the air. Right. That's, you know, I mean, but to be fair, man, we're pretty real.
We're pretty real.
I mean, yeah. we don't really pull punches, especially not on ourselves. I mean, mm-hmm. If anything, we pull punches on issues we have with other stuff. But I mean, mm-hmm. if it just involves us, we are brutally honest yeah. about our feelings.
But if you just want to hear us drop some F-bombs, come to a convention.
Definitely.
Or me, at least.
There's more salty language yeah. At the conventions, for
yeah.
sure.
Right. When we're not, yeah. Come to a convention and talk to us when we're not actively recording.
Right. Also, you'll find that we are much meaner to each other in person than we
yes,
are.
Indeed.
So, yeah. But, yeah. Anyways. But what's also, come see us at a convention, because that's always great. I yes. have a bunch of... So, we have a few voicemails. I'm going to save those for the end, okay. just because it's yep. probably a little easier that way. All right.
I've got another good one.
Go for it.
Okay, this is from Sean on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @TedTheBug2602. Would you rather play a fantasy MOBA board game or one with WWE heroes and fan minions? Do you know what a MOBA is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good.
Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we define it for the listeners?
A MOBA is like a multiplayer online battle arena. It's like Dota or
yeah.
League. Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you rather play a fantasy MOBA board game or a board game with WWE heroes and fan minions?
I'd rather play the MOBA.
Because
that'd be more strategy.
yeah. I mean, I'm not a fan of wrestling. But I find MOBAs, just the whole idea of that, terribly dull.
Yeah, they're pretty bad, but
I you know what? I'm going to get on the side of WWE heroes and fan minions, because I would like to see what the fans can do when they get into the match.
I don't.
You know, I would like to see that.
But that's fair. All right. Robin Gibson says, would you rather play Carcassonne or Settlers of Catan with all the expansions?
So either one with all the expansions?
I assume that's what he
okay,
means.
Okay, all right. I have never played Catan with any expansions, but I have played Carcassonne with, I think I've tried 5 or 6 different expansions, and those vary greatly in quality.
Yeah, I bet they do.
To the point where generally Christine and I only ever play Carcassonne with a base set for the most part.
Right.
The only expansion we really like, well, okay, so we play with a river because that's important. Then the only other expansion we use is the King and the Robber Baron, because that is such a driver of strategy. We love that expansion, but we don't use any others. And this is not a for the rest of your life question. This is just, which do you prefer?
No, it would you rather play it?
Okay.
Like, so...
I would rather try Catan with all the expansions, because I've never played it with any expansions then.
I think I would rather try Carcassonne for the same reason, because okay. the only expansion we play with is Catan is a 5-6 player expansion, yeah. just to make the board bigger, because yeah. it's more fun that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could handle. I think it would break my brain. So Carcassonne, at least I don't know how to play, so it would just mm-hmm. be like, oh, look, this game is huge and sucky.
Well, it's not.
Well, it would be with all the expansions.
Well, okay, that's a fair point. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, your turn.
Okay. I've got a bunch here from Tom Greganis now. First of all, what cons are you all doing this year? So I think we talked about that before. We're doing all we have left here. We have Origins, Gen Con, and Grand Con.
Yep.
Yep. Those are our next big ones. And I don't think I'll be able to make it to anything else.
Definitely not for yep. me.
He also asks, what is the current hot board game theme? What do you think?
I don't know.
Because zombies have kind of declined.
Yeah.
They're petering out. Westerns is kind of...
Well, Westerns is kind of a mainline, though, right? Like, it's just kind of always a thing.
Yeah.
But, like, lately... You know what I think? I think legacy games are coming in.
They are, yeah.
You've got Dead of Winter, the expansion. Wait, is Dead of Winter a legacy game? No, it's not. It's not. Whatever, I made that up.
Yeah.
Maybe the second one is. I don't know. I don't know. John Gilmore is smart. So I can think of at least two legacy games. There's Pandemic Legacy and Risk Legacy. Right. So I would call that a trend.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably not. No, I don't know. I was thinking of that one, Dead Wind 3, but...
I think that the trend is licensed properties.
You know what? That is a good point. Yeah,
because right now we just saw Ghostbusters 2 is on Kickstarter right now. Dark Souls the board game is on Kickstarter right now. What else just recently hit? Crap! I'm having a total brain fart. Back to the Future did well. The Princess Bride game.
Goonies did all right.
Goonies did well. So I think licensed properties. Yeah, gamer indie gamer games with licensed properties, I think, are the trend now.
Yep,
I think we're getting into that,
and which basically means it's just the rise of Riddle and Pinchback. So
I mean, yeah, right.
Because you know, I mean, basically, that's like they're doing all the licensed games.
That's
so
that's all they can do. You know, they can't think of anything original on their own.
No,
those guys. I'm telling you,
I think Fleet that was just ripping off Deadliest Catch, right?
Basically.
And then what else? Eggs and Empires. I think that was it. I think that was taken from some John Hughes movie from the 80s. It's basically The Breakfast Club as a movie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, eggs for breakfast.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And this
and Empires, you know, that's like a club. So
basically.
Yeah, so it's The Breakfast Club. I mean, it's code name, guys. You got to pay attention to that sort of thing.
Right.
So Floating Market, that's Top Gun.
What, they're working on something called Ladder 29? It's just Backdraft.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just Backdraft. Yeah, right. That's all it is. Yeah.
I mean, that's Ladder 29. It's a code name.
Yeah. So, guys, guys, come on, man. Those two. Hey, is Robin Gibson asked, is this the wienerest question I've ever asked?
Yes.
Yes. I feel like he's asking about Carcassonne and Catan, but I'm just going to take the question on its own and say, yes, it is. Wiener.
If you have to use the word wiener, then that means it's a wiener question.
Then it is total wiener question.
Does he mean whiner?
No, he wrote wienerist.
Okay.
I mean, maybe he meant whiner, but if he did, he's bad at spelling. Okay. And I think Robin's a smart guy, so I'm going to guess that he meant wiener.
Okay. Got another one?
No.
Okay.
That's all you know. Then I got voicemails.
Once again, got some. So, gosh, man, Tom is just on a roll. Tom Kurganis. Okay, whatever happened to Ally Sheedy? Well, I think she's working with Riddle and Pinchback.
Probably, yeah.
Know, to try and adapt some of her other hot 80s properties.
They have her locked in a closet somewhere, and they're just stealing ideas from her. Right. Basically, that's it.
Yeah,
so.
Basically. What was there? She was some crappy sci-fi movie that she did.
Was she?
Was it like...
Was she in Sharknado?
No. I don't think so. But I knew, like, back in the 80s, it was like... Like something on the caliber of Hell Comes to Frogtown, you know, like one of those really bad ones.
I don't know.
I don't remember what it is, but so she's working with Riddle and Pinchback.
I think they're doing St. Elmo's Fire. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Well, I see. Oh gosh, what's the 16 Candles is?
She's not in that,
isn't she? Oh, I thought she was in that.
That's Molly Ringwald.
Oh. You know what? Then I don't know what Ally Sheedy's doing up because Molly Ringwald is who I was thinking about.
Oh yeah, I don't know what she's up with either.
Oh, Ally Sheedy, she was the one in Short Circuit.
Oh yeah.
That's the okay. That explains another's game code name that I've heard from Matt and Ben. Yeah, that bird game they're talking about. It's about disassembling Johnny Five.
Oh my gosh, you guys, come on, try harder.
Right. Anyway.
This is bad.
It's real bad. Tom, what is that game Daniel Solis just tweeted about? I don't know.
Kombucha? I don't know.
Kombucha? Kombucha? I know what kombucha is.
It's not that. He's got this really weird tree game where you like build a tree with these cards.
Okay.
It looks cool. There's like you put cards in.
Everything he does looks cool.
You would hate this game, I just want to say, because the cards don't line up correctly.
Oh.
They're just all like smattered across to make the tree, and you would want to set it on fire.
Okay, that would make me.
It looks really cool though, because again, he probably did the artwork or paid someone to do the art who's good.
Yeah, somebody amazing to do amazing art. So. Yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah,
he makes beautiful things.
He does.
Yeah. What is the status of Saloon Tycoon? You should probably ask.
You didn't get your copy yet? I already have my copy.
You should ask
AJ. Not true. I'm not kidding.
No. So if anybody is a backer, you probably saw the backer update a couple of weeks ago, I think, where he showed off a video of the production copy. It looks freaking great.
Yeah.
It looks freaking great. So last I heard is well, the only thing I know is what you guys saw in that backer update, which is that everything looked good, and they were going to make a few final comments, and then away it goes. So,
nice.
Hopefully that means that we are on track for that goal of an August release, and we can have it at Gen Con. Fingers crossed. I know that a lot of conversation has been going on around the hubs thing. All the people involved in the hubs are communicating and working out shipping details and making decisions about that stuff.
Cool.
So that's all going smoothly. Last one I've got here from Tom. Last one I have, period. What design have you put down that you really want to pick up back up, but the spark just isn't there? What do you think?
Oh, for me?
Mm-hmm.
Good one. Oh yeah. Okay. Best one. I can think of a couple, but I'm going to go with the best one because this is a good game and it makes me mad that I'm not doing anything with it.
Okay.
But I don't think everyone's going to publish it. And that's Sandbox Showdown.
Yeah.
I feel really good about that game. I feel good about where I left it before I got a bunch of bad feedback and made a bunch of bad choices. Mm-hmm. I felt really good about it. Yeah. But mm-hmm. now I feel not good about it because mm-hmm. I'm not working on it.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I liked that game too. I liked a lot when it was 2-player area control game. Yeah. I liked it when it was that.
Me too.
And then when that other person gave you a bunch of feedback,
yeah,
wanted you to turn it to something
just
else.
Made the game go bankrupt.
I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy those changes.
See what I did there?
Yeah,
it was funny.
It was clever. I let it pass because I didn't want to dwell on it. But then you called it out.
It's all right. Move on.
So, for me, that was Soda Kings for a long time. But actually, just yesterday, I had a little moment of inspiration. I had a new spark in my brain for how to approach Soda Kings. So I am back to working on that. So that's my answer. I don't have one that I regret.
Light a fire in your brain. Right.
Which means, Len, I know you're listening to this. I never did read your feedback from the last time you and I were talking about that, and I apologize. I'm trying again. Once I actually get some of this put together, I would love your feedback on that, and I will send you an email. Anyway, speaking of Len, I think we have a voicemail.
EG Leader Works, what's going on? So, listening to episode 202, and I drive home from Unpub, and Rob is talking about playing his game, the Board Game of the Month Club game, and how he can't talk about it, and he mentioned that it was an idea that Jason and Ben took, and yada, 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 for 202. But I was thinking, once it's released, is it possible you could do a segment to talk about what you gave and then what they developed, and that might just be a good topic to talk about development and how a developer can build a game. I don't know if it always works that way, or if you want to do it that way, or if Jason wants to do it that way, but just an idea. Just a way. Later.
Heck, I feel like you could talk about it and no one would know. It's so different.
I think that's a freaking brilliant idea.
That's really good, Len.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. In fact, maybe we could have Jason and Ben come on the show to talk about that.
Yeah.
Either both or one
great
or the other.
Great idea.
Yeah. I love that idea. And I mean, these Board Game of the Month games are small, right? So it's not like this is a massive sprawling project, but I think it is an excellent opportunity for us to talk about that because, I think those guys are a pretty cool team, the way they work together on that stuff.
I think so too.
And I would love just to talk with them about that stuff in general.
I think it'd be a good conversation.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great idea, Len. Thanks for that. Do we have another one?
He has another one here. Ooh. So let's hope this is also good.
All right.
I'm curious if the words peanut butter and mustard are in here because that's in the Google translation. So let's see if the words peanut butter and mustard are in here.
Sounds like an interesting sandwich.
This also starts saying PG Winterwork, which I'm sure is BTG Leonard Wexford.
Yeah.
BTG Leonard Wexford, what's going on? So just finished episode 202. And the talk about the would you rather have two tails of the peanut butter for 1 hour or a cup of mustard, I'm telling you right now, from experience, peanut butter all the way. I've done the mustard, and yes, Jason, you were correct. You get sick. Ding, ding, ding. All right, talk to you later. Bye.
That was the best voicemail ever, Len.
Oh, I've forgotten about that question.
So Len referring to our question, the would you rather put have a 2 tablespoons of peanut butter in your mouth for an hour
or drink a cup of mustard. And we both went with the peanut butter,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then then Len backed us up that mustard will make you sick. Choice. So
no, I want to know the story of why he drank a cup of mustard.
Oh, Len. You're going to have to tell us that at Origins.
Yeah, Max. Or call back and leave us a voicemail.
Yes.
Yeah. That's great.
All right. Now we have one more message.
All right.
I believe this is from Nate Darty.
Oh.
So it looks like this one's a little longer, but all here right. we go.
Cool.
Hey, guys. It's Nate. I'm driving in the middle of nowhere, Indiana, so hopefully I don't lose reception here. I just listened to the episode about, mostly about Hit City and getting picked up by Mark. And I had a thought. I don't know how far into the process you are, so maybe this won't even work, or maybe you won't like the idea. But I remember that you've talked before about how fantasy can be off-putting theme for some people, for mainstream people. They see it as, just sort of a geeky thing or whatever. But back at FranCon, we talked about theming the game formerly known as Hit City with Wizard of Oz theme. And so I don't know how far you are into the artwork or whatnot, but that could potentially be a way to keep a sort of fantastical theme, but also put a skin on it that is familiar to mainstream people that might attract a bit more attention to, to your Kickstarter and beyond just the typical fantasy stuff. So anyway, just a thought. I'm happy for you, Jason. I think it'll be cool, and I'll be happy to see the game as it develops. Bye.
Hey, great message there from
Nate.
I'd
forgotten about that conversation at FranCon. Yeah.
I had too. So let's talk about that. So one of the ideas for this game was to make it a Wizard of Oz game. That was when I was really concerned about it being like a flowing game, like a river, because the original game was the River Mighty. And we had talked about the Wizard of Oz being a nice, the Yellow Brick Road being like they're walking down the Yellow Brick Road. And actually it was funny. So I actually talked to Corinne Roberts about doing some artwork for that so that I could show it to a publisher. And she was going to help me out with that. And then I looked up and there were some licensing things with Wizard of Oz. Basically, like if you can stay away from looking like their character specifically, like
from the movie, the MGM movie.
Yeah. The MGM movie, then you're probably okay. But some of it was in, and I was talking to Katarsky, just asking him for some thoughts on it. And he had just said, if I was a publisher who was going to do that game, it would make me nervous.
Mm.
He's like, and he's like, maybe I'm more conservative than some, but it would make me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So that was enough to get my attention. And
sure.
So then I was kind of inspired by the Dice Hate Me contest to make it into a drafting game where it was about building something and drafting the drafting game. And then from there, so when Mark Spector first said to me, I want to make it fantasy, setting, I was a little nervous about that. And I've said that on here and I told Mark that when he said that, and then I said to him, well, what if we got Corinne? And he said, yes. And then I didn't care anymore. So the nice thing, Nate, you've probably seen Corinne's artwork before, because you were at Grand Con and she's popular there. Mm-hmm. So I really think that, her artwork will bridge that gap that makes it not off-putting because her artwork is so cute and so it just draws you in. Mm-hmm. So that I actually think will lend a huge credit to approachability. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be what sells the game on Kickstarter. I think the game's going to do really well on Kickstarter, and I really believe it's because of her artwork.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah. That's what I got with that.
Good.
That is everything we have.
That's everything.
It's actually perfect timing because it's time for you to pitch a game.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so this is the game that I'm entering. Let me bring up my notes here.
That you entered. Bring up your notes. It's like a 2-minute game pitch, Rob.
Yeah, but I want to make sure I have all the characters right.
Oh, great. Just play your video.
Just play that in the microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I probably could do that, technically.
It's pretty much the whole game.
Pretty much the whole game. Yeah, so, okay, so the game, I don't have a good name for it. So the two names I'm kind of waffling between are Dungeon Ruckus and Treasure Trouble.
Treasure Trouble is way better. My wife and I both agree.
Okay. But some of the other ideas were Get Off My Chest.
Also a great one.
Dibs. Treasure Trove. Anyway. The basic idea is that the players, it's two player game, 18 cards. The players are two parties of adventurers that have both been running the same dungeon from different directions, and they've bumped into each other at the end of the dungeon. They've just both just defeated the boss, the final monster. And now the prize after killing the monster is this giant treasure chest. And now they have to figure out who's going to get it, because they both want it, and they both want all of it. And so the game is about playing characters for an influence value, and whoever has the highest influence value is going to win the chest at the end of the round or end of the game. Or alternatively, you can use those characters for special powers to affect the game in some way. You play, you know, one round, one complete game takes about 5 minutes, and I figure you play the game 5 times, whoever has the highest score at the end of that is the winner, is kind of the idea.
Makes sense.
Can play the whole thing in, you know, 20-25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So with a small game like this, of course, the characters and their powers make all the difference, right?
Oh, yeah.
So to kind of talk through some of those things here, the characters I've got here, I've got the knight, the warden, the goblin, the merchant, the cleric, the ogre, the bard, the rogue, the friar, the alchemist, the tinker, the necromancer, the wizard, the ranger, and the diplomat. At the start of the game, you shuffle up the cards, again, two players, and you discard 3 cards, set them aside so you don't know what they are. Okay. That really does a lot to, first of all, it stops card counting, but it really does a lot to mixing up the strategy.
Yep.
Because you really don't know what's coming.
Right.
With Love Letter, one card out is one card out, and you don't know what that is, but there's not a huge impact to the game necessarily when you do that.
Yeah, only if it's like the princess.
Right.
And then it's a pretty big impact, but yeah, that's about it.
Right. So by discarding 3 cards, it really changes the flow of that game a lot.
Right.
So on your turn, and you start the game, you get each player gets 2 cards then. So you discard 3, each player starts with 2 cards in your hand. And then on your turn, you have to play one of those cards. And you either play it for the influence value in a space in front of you, or you play it next to the chest for the special power. Some characters have simple powers, like the knight. The knight can kill somebody. He can kill any character out there on the table.
Yep.
You know, they just send him to the discard. And if you play him to your influence pile, he's only worth 2. Okay.
Right.
And the range is 2 to 8.
Okay. Right.
The next guy in here is the warden. Now, the warden, again, is also only worth 2. But what you can do with him is his power is that he can lock the chest. And so if you play the warden on the chest, that means the chest is locked. So at the end of the round, if the chest is locked, no one gets it.
Right.
Okay. No one wins the round. No one gets a point for that. You can, though. You can unlock that chest. You can use the rogue to unlock the chest. The tinker can also unlock the chest. The difference is that once the rogue unlocks that, he's done. He's out of the game. But the tinker can unlock it, and then you can still put him back in your influence pile, and he's worth...
Half.
He's worth 3 influence points instead of his normal 6.
Okay? Turn him sideways, I think you said.
Yeah, turn him sideways, turn him 90 degrees. Basically tap it, right?
Yeah.
Tap it, and so it indicates
trademark.
That he's been used. The other funky thing here is the necromancer. Now, the necromancer can curse the chest. And that means whoever wins the chest at the end of the game, actually, you know, they get the chest and it's cursed, and so they are cursed. Basically, what it does, it reverses the scoring.
So they lose a point, right?
So it's not that they lose a point, but the other player wins a point.
Okay,
The player who doesn't get the chest is the one that gets the point. Or you can use the friar to bless the chest, to basically cure it so it's not cursed anymore.
What if...
Now, I should also say, theoretically, you could use the knight to kill the warden to unlock the chest, but once the necromancer curses the chest, that's done, and the knight can't kill the necromancer after cursing. He's not going to lift the curse.
So the friar is only good if the necromancer's out.
Yeah, but that's why he's also worth 5 influence. So if he's not around, he's worth a really high value in your influence pile.
Can I give you another thought?
Sure.
What if he blesses the chest? If it's not cursed, it's worth 2 points.
That's a pretty good idea.
I know. I've played you with those cards, but it didn't occur to me until right now. Like, wow, why not? Because when you said the point, well, actually, it reverses who gets the point.
Mm-hmm.
Why not make it worth 2? And then if you played the Necromancer, now it's just worth 1. So you could actually put the Friar on it ahead of time if you wanted. Like, I'm going to win. So you put the Friar out there.
But then if you curse it after the Friar's on it, it's still cursed.
Yeah, I could see that. Why not? So the curse negates the friar.
Yeah, I got, you know, I got to make sure I'm thinking about order of operations with this stuff.
Right.
Because different things come out in different orders.
Right. So so think about that. But yeah, that could be cool.
That's a good idea.
That's, make, you know, because if I think I'm going to win, put that on there, you know, and then you could curse me and I'd be screwed.
Right.
So yeah.
That's not a bad idea. But yeah, without going through every character, I can go through every character.
Did you mention the goblins?
So yeah, so the goblins are pretty cool too. So the goblins on their own are only worth 3 influence points, but there's 3 goblins in the game. So in their power, they have a passive power. Some of the characters have a passive power that's in effect while they're in their influence pile. So your only option is to put them to your influence pile. Now with the goblins, alone there were 3, but if you get 2 of them together, that they're double their points.
Right.
So they're worth 6 each. So if you get all 3 goblins, they're still only worth 6 each.
But yeah.
But that's a lot.
It's 18 points.
18
that's
points.
That's more
right
than
there.
Most of us was scoring in a game.
That's hard to beat.
And what's great about dropping 3 cards is 2 goblins get dropped, and that goblin now sucks, but you don't know it.
You don't know it until the game's over.
So.
Right. So it's kind of a risk there. So to talk about some of the other ones real quick, let's see. So the merchant is worth 4 influence. His power, again, is passive. So when he's in your influence pile, if the chest is locked and you win the round, you would still get the chest.
Right. I just think it's great.
Yeah. So you can still get the point even if it's locked. Now, if you have the lower influence value at the end, you still don't win.
Right.
But it gives you the opportunity to win even if it's locked. The cleric allows you, his power is resurrection, so allows you basically to take any discarded or killed character straight to your hand.
Right, which is really powerful.
Really powerful. The ogre is in there. The ogre, his powers dominate. So again, passive, what that means is if he's in your influence pile, your opponent cannot put any cards into their influence worth more than 4, worth more than the ogre.
I really like that one.
Yeah, it's good. The bard, his special power is that he can mimic the non-passive power of any character currently in an influence pile. So he can just emulate any one thing. He can
just cool.
Yeah, he can do it whatever he wants.
Which if you have the bard, the cool thing is like say I play the knight sucks, but let's say that I play someone out who's got a cool power for their points.
So if I've got the necromancer in my influence pile and I'm going to win because he's worth a lot, you can play the bard to mimic that and curse the chest and screw me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the bard can also mimic the friar. He can mimic one of the lockpickers. So he can mimic anybody if they're in the influence pile.
Yep. Or the warden.
Or the warden. Yeah. Or the warden.
Because the warden's sitting in your influence pile. Yep. Just drop my. Yeah. So the bard is broken, kind of. But he's he's the wild card, right?
Yeah.
He balances the game really nicely.
Right.
So.
Right. So I talked about the rogue and the friar. The alchemist is a good one. I like the alchemist. He can poison. That's his power. So you can basically you play the alchemist to your opponent's influence pile. So on his own, in your influence pile, he's worth 6. But if you apply him to your opponents, then you tap him. You turn him 90 degrees, and he's worth -3 to your opponent.
Nice.
Yeah. I talked about the tinker. The wizard is another good one. The wizard's power allows you to trade one influence character with your opponents. You can basically swap guys out. So I could use a wizard to give you the alchemist and hurt you that you gave to me originally, theoretically.
Right.
You know? Or again, or swap around the ogre situation. We have the ranger. The ranger can force the other player to discard from their hand. So that means on their next turn, they don't have 2 cards to choose from. They have to play whatever they've got in their hand. That really sucks, especially if I'm limited by what the ogre can do to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the diplomat is worth a number of influence equal to the number of cards in your opponent's influence pile.
Is the alchemist, is that passive? Or is that an active power? Because you choose to play it that way.
It's an active power, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So go with this. You can actually play the alchemist on your opponent and then play the bard on your opponent.
You sure can.
That's really mean. I love it.
Yep.
So then it's -6, yeah.
-6, yep.
That's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in the one thing that you didn't intend this when you designed it, because I know you added the ogre later.
Yeah.
But the bard is nice because he's worth 6, but I can't play him because you gave me the ogre. So fine, take -3. Not the bard, the alchemist. So
yeah,
boom,
yeah,
take
right.
-3. So that is the cards play very nicely together.
Yeah, that was important. And I think over the course of developing the game, there were 5 or 6 cards that were in and out over the development process and changed several powers. And I'm pretty pleased with the final combo that I've got here. So I like that idea of changing the value of brain fart or the
fryer. The fryer, right? Because yeah. Everybody kind of has two things they can do, like yeah. two ways that they're useful, mm-hmm. and he's not, and that's yeah. a really good.
So that's a good one.
Yeah,
I'm also thinking that so the diplomat is worth one for everybody's influence for the number of cards. He might be better as worth two. Instead yeah. of one.
Yeah, I agree. Because yeah, yeah. Because then if you got a lot of cards out, man, he can just be a killer.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so that those
you could also. Play the bard on someone and then play the diplomat and get 2 points for it. Well, and they're losing.
So the diplomat has a passive power. So the bard cannot emulate
No, I'm
that.
Sorry, not the bard. I keep saying the bard. The alchemist.
Okay.
Play the alchemist, you lose three. Then I play the, what's his name? The diplomat on my yeah. side. I get plus two. You get minus three. That's a 5 point swing.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
pretty sweet.
Right. So yeah, so it plays super fast and it's kind of silly. And we did a couple of play tests. At One Well a week or so ago with some friends, and I think we played the game like 8 times in a row. It was a blast. Nice. Really good fun.
One note, because I don't forget to say this. Uh-huh. The ogre should say whose printed value is 6 or higher, because you should still be able to play the diplomat good when call. The ogre comes out, because
yeah,
he's got the star.
Right, and that's my intention, that you can
yeah.
still
so
play. Yeah, yeah.
I could see that being a question, yep, so if you just put printed value, then done.
Good call on that,
so,
yeah.
Cool, all right.
Yeah, so that's a game. Again, I don't know. I would love listener feedback on name ideas for that.
And as you entered this kind of so Tagmire, I know for a fact he's got like 12 other characters he could add to this game. So if you did this as if you select it and then go ahead and kickstart it, you could totally have stretch goals out the wazoo for more characters.
Easily expandable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you and I went back and forth and we came up with like 12 probably extra ones.
Yeah,
so
right.
And you used like two of them.
Yeah.
So,
right. So
and you traded out two for that. So you have even more.
Right. Right.
So
yeah. So really happy with that. We did do a 4-player playtest. And I mean, it worked, but basically everybody got 2 turns and that was the end of the game.
Right.
So it was over real quick. I think it might work okay with 3.
See, I think if I'm a publisher, I publish 2 versions of the game,
mm-hmm.
give them slightly like part one of like, so you've got party one and party two, right? Cause there's 2 adventuring parties, right? Mm-hmm. So you put different cards in both.
Different art or different cards entirely?
Different cards entirely. They could okay. have the same back, right? So
yeah.
that you can mix them.
Yeah, they'd have to, yeah.
But, so you could have complete 2, like, and you could have things like, so in the second set, you've got 3 goblin type things, like 3 guys together that do something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 2 full games, right? You could back for one or you could back for both and
it's
then
true.
Have 2 full games,
not a bad idea.
Combine them, boom, now you got a 4-player game.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of playtesting to manage all those interactions.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
But, oh, yeah, so, boom, sold.
Yeah.
So, coming soon from Button Shy Games.
I'm really pleased. I should say, so I tweeted out the link to the print and play and the rules sheet. So, if anybody wants to look back through my Twitter history, you can certainly find that. Or shoot us an email, buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. And I think we can share that out. That should be pretty easy. Unless I win the contest, in which case maybe Button Shy doesn't want me to.
I don't think they care.
Probably not.
You still own your game, says right in there.
That's true.
So
yeah.
All right.
You
real quick before we go. Yeah. So the prize we talked about a couple weeks ago, the
Art,
contest.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So the prize of this contest, if you design your own dice football game, you could be a judge in the 2016 Iron Design Challenge. Being a judge is one of the best things ever. Lots of perks that come with it, like being a judge and mm-hmm. being there when it happens.
Sitting in a chair,
uh-huh. Giving an opinion.
Right.
Having people dislike you. It's all giggles, man.
I mean, all those things are things that I enjoy.
So if you're going to Gen Con, I encourage you to do this. Now, if you're not going to Gen Con and you still want to enter, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
We said we will find a game, we will find a prize, we'll send you something from our collection, something. We'll figure it out. We will definitely make it worth your while.
Yep.
We will send you some good stuff. But yeah, so yeah, anyway, so that's that. All right, so the rules are, and remember with football, it can be your loose interpretation of football as ours was or your incorrect interpretation. So dice only, but you can have pen and paper, for scoring or whatever you need it for. Yeah, so we need to set a deadline.
Yeah, deadline.
Let's give you guys a little bit more time here. So
yeah, because we should have said that up front.
So let's say,
you want to say June 6th?
June 6th. Let's go with that.
So June 6th, that's going to be. That's basically going to give you guys 4 weeks from today to finalize your designs and get them into us.
Yep.
Get them in no later than June 6th. We will, I'm not sure what our recording schedule is exactly, but by the end of June, we will pick a winner. Sound good to you?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Send us as much information as you want. Again, I want to reiterate, these are your designs. We are not keeping these designs. We are not publishing these designs. These are your games. We're just looking for the most fun approach.
Right.
And I know we people have told us that there are a couple existing football dice games out there. So, and I don't know, I have not played any of those. I have not read rules. I don't know anything about them. So we are fresh on this.
Exactly.
You're completely fresh.
Completely fresh.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Okay.
Yes. So real quick.
Into the microphone, please.
Real quick. Robin Gibson would like to revise his question about Catan or Carcassonne. His question is, which would you rather eat?
Which would we rather eat?
Carcassonne. There's a lot of wooden bits in Catan, and I think...
they're small, aren't they? Carcassonne meeples are kind of big.
Oh, are they? Oh. Well, he didn't say... Ooh. How many meeples come in Carcassonne?
That was 7 per player?
Oh, Lord. Okay, yeah. Never mind. You know what?
With all the expansions?
There are more expansions for Catan, though. I'm telling you.
Is there a lot of wood in those?
Lots of wood... there's lots of cardboard.
Carcassonne is all chipboard.
You know what? Catan might actually be better. I'm gonna go with Catan.
Okay. Yeah, because I feel like with the chipboard, whatever, you just kind of mix it in water, suck on it for a while, it'll dissolve.
Yeah.
You know.
But
the wood. I don't know.
I'd like to revise my answer to the worst thing about being a game designer and say that question. Answering that question was the worst thing about being a game designer. Because that sounds really terrible.
And then, with all the expansions, Carcassonne, there's like the princess and the dragon, and that dragon meeple is like big, dude.
He didn't say you couldn't break it. I would break it down.
Could I put it through a grinder and turn it to sawdust?
That still sounds gross.
I mean, it's gross, but at least it's not a big chunk of hard, sharp-edged wood.
I feel like none of it's healthy, so we should probably not do any of that.
Well, this is a thought experiment,
right,
Jason.
So that's why I said Catan.
Okay.
All right. We're running out of time.
Okay. So,
all right.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. Like us on Facebook. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and where all great podcasts are found. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG, and we'll see you guys again next week. And keep on keeping on and having a fun time. And we love you guys. And bye-bye.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
You know, man, I kind of miss Andy. Whatever happened to Andy?
I don't know what happened to Andy. I miss him a lot. We never see him anymore. We never hear from him. Yeah. He doesn't call. He doesn't write.
Man, he was the third host.
He was, and then he just kind of disappeared. I guess, you know, we got busy. Life got busy, you know.
Yeah.
He moved on.
Hey, guys. I'm right here.
I miss that guy.
Me too.
Oh, well. Screw him.